And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm with the privacy and security officer on doing a walkthrough. And I kind of looked at him. I said, am I being punked right now or am I in candid camera?
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to episode 17 of Help Me with HIPAA. Today, we will be doing an interview with Jerry Blass of Comply Assistant, and we'll talk a little bit about where he comes from, what he's doing with Comply Assistant, and what Comply Assistant is and how it can be a benefit in your organization. But before we get started, I always like to say hi to my lovely co-host, Donna Grindle. How are you today?
Hi, I'm feeling lovely.
That's good. Yeah, so Jerry's already laughing about that. So. It's going to be a fun interview.
Yeah.
Very good. So we'll just dive right in, and I want to go ahead and introduce, I've kind of already introduced Jerry, but I want to give Jerry an opportunity to introduce himself and talk a little bit about his background and about his product, Comply Assistant. And that's your actual company name too, right? That's not just a product. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, very good. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your product and company.
Okay, well, to go back to my starting point, I go back to 1976.
Ooh.
I was with a company called Burroughs. Have you ever heard of Burroughs?
Oh, wow.
Competitor to IBM mainly. And interesting thing is that my father back then worked at Sperry's, and it turns out that Burroughs and Sperry's combined into what is called Unisys today.
Mm-hmm.
But I went from Burroughs before the merger with Sperry's. I left them and went to a company that was a shared system company like SMS, now Siemens, now Cerner. They were called Timeshare Medical. And the reason why is because in the healthcare industry at that time, around the late 70s, the hardware companies didn't really have good healthcare software, and there was bigger demands on regulatory reporting. So the shared systems, shared companies were able to devote a lot of resources to programming types of reports that were necessary for regulatory. So I made the move over to shared. But the bottom line is, no matter what, it was the mainframe in that mysterious data center that only few people had access to. And
even in the basement. Don't forget it was in the basement.
Yeah, usually in a hospital, it was in the basement.
Yeah.
The computer people were the geniuses of the world. Nobody understood.
Still are.
Still are.
Hey, don't diss us.
Yeah, nobody understood what they did. And the users had dumb terminals. They actually called them dumb terminals.
Yeah.
They were dumb because they had no ability to store data. They had no ability to copy, you know, to external devices and things like that. They had no access outside of facility that they were in and the mainframe. So they got all their intelligence from the mainframe, and that was it. So that was pretty much even throughout the 80s. I remember first time I saw a PC around 82, 83 was the IBM, I guess, XT, whatever it was, version with DOS. I was thinking to myself, what is that doing here, and why is anybody wasting their time on it?
You know? Yeah.
It actually was used one time to reformat a trial balance, an AR trial balance for a hospital, because they wanted customization to it. Instead of 3 weeks of COBOL, they ran a program on the PC for over the weekend, and it actually created the report and was looked upon as a miracle, because the report was created in 2 days instead of 3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So we all know what happened through the 80s into the 90s, and the thought of information security was nowhere, because the threats were minimal. You know, before the explosion in the 90s, PHI wasn't even called PHI, but the health information really could only exist in two places when you think about it. One was on the mainframe, maybe three places. On the mainframe being stored on backup tapes, usually in the same computer room. And then they would move to another location, and then on hard copy. And that was it. And there was no motivation to steal medical information. You know, nobody ever thought there was any kind of value to stealing information. You know, what was the value? What are they going to do with it? So through the 90s, of course, everything changed. The revolution, and it happened with technology increasing. And when it was happening for emails and internet and the distributed servers, the client server, the smart workstations, the starting of some of the mobile, you know, the CD storage, and really information went from three places to geometrically anywhere. But nobody really thought, you know, do we, you know, there's a need to make sure it's secure. Now, the Arthur Ashe story happened in the, probably the first half of the 1990s, and the Clinton incident happened. And it was during the Clinton administration that the HIPAA law was passed, but it was primarily passed to be administrative simplification over transactions and over the exchange of information. But it wasn't, you know, looked upon initially, the driving force was not about privacy and security, but of course they included that in the HIPAA law. And lo and behold, I heard the first HIPAA word mentioned around the late 90s. I was in a health system where we had Siemens SMS, and all of a sudden it was a conference call around HIPAA, and I had no clue what that meant. I just went and listened in on the meeting. Now, I remember having a boss who was an AVP in this health system, and he said to me, as we were driving to one of our hospitals to do some work, he said, you know, I think security is going to become a big deal, a real big deal. And I'm thinking police security in hospitals, right?
Right.
I wasn't even thinking information security. And he said, no, information security is going to become a big deal. Now, that, you know, registered on my brain. And I'm thinking, okay, information security. So, you know, what's the problem with information security, right? Why is that going to become a big deal? And so basically that was detoured because of Y2K. I was put in charge of Y2K with that same manager. And I was detoured away from that thought of information security. But I was involved in an enterprise-wide project. And everybody knows how that turned out.
Yeah.
Lots of money spent on it. Lots of areas of impact within an organization, even thoughts of having power outages and people from the town, you know, almost attacking the hospital for warmth.
The villagers attack.
Yeah, for food and warmth. That whole, you know, scenario, almost like zombies coming down the street to the hospital. So that, of course, didn't happen. But after Y2K blew over, HIPAA kind of started to take front and center, and I was made the information security officer simply because they did Y2K, which made no sense, but that's why I was put into it, because it was another enterprise-type project. So I got into information security sheerly by being told, you will be the information security officer, and that was back in 1998.
In the last century, go ahead and say it.
That's right. So it was even in conjunction with the Y2K thing, but you know, I was told I would be that as soon as Y2K ended. So in 2002, I started my own company called Comply System, but really it was called Blast Consulting back then. Focus was on healthcare IT consulting and HIPAA. And HIPAA was in its infancy, but organizations were getting ready for HIPAA. And it was a big focus on privacy as well as security. And policies and procedures were big. It was the infancy. And it was even teaching clinical folks, yes, you can actually talk about a patient to a doctor, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. You need to do that.
Yeah.
You can't say you can't tell anything even to a doctor, right?
Oh, yeah, so, the panic, when everybody panicked over, oh, my God, HIPAA, I can't tell anybody anything.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. So the other interesting thing that came up around 2003 was somebody asked me, well, what are you going to do after HIPAA? Because you're focusing so much on HIPAA. And I said, I don't know. I said, I'll come to that, you know, cross that bridge when I get to it. So here we are in 2015, and we're still talking HIPAA and high tech and omnibus and breaches and, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there is an after HIPAA.
There is no after HIPAA, right. Now, one of my clients back around the effective dates of HIPAA, privacy and security, had me come in and do an audit. And after we did the audit, we presented the results. They said, okay, we're done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what do you mean? We're compliant. Now, they had like 40 action items, but they said, we're compliant, right? And I said, well, I can tell you this. If the government came in tomorrow, you have some kind of complaint, they came in and wanted to see your evidence. As of today, as of tomorrow, you'd do okay. But in 6 months from now or a year from now, if you haven't done one thing since today, you're not okay.
Right.
Well, because we identified about 40 things that you need to do. So you better, you know, you need to do them. But that was the perception, that if they had an assessment done, and that was not just them, it was really everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you had an assessment done, it was like a one-time event. It had a begin date and an end date, and you're done, and that's it.
That's still it.
Okay.
Trust me, it is. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah. So that, you know, and in the organization I was in, it was kind of a larger organization, and they had that perception back then. I'm not sure if that perception is mainly in the smaller organizations or still in some of the large, but I think most of the larger organizations know, especially with the news, with the breaches, that this is not a one-time thing and that they know what their problems are in trying to deal with it. Now,
yeah,
I don't want to.
Yeah, the larger ones, they got over it and got on board and started doing more. I mean, we still hear about these huge breaches and things not being in place. But in the small environment, which is where we generally, you know, not the big hospitals and stuff, we still have people that say, what, David?
Stay out of my breaches. No.
HIPAA schmippa. We actually have HIPAA schmippa. Literally, doctor said that to someone. HIPAA schmippa. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. And so
it's still happening.
And I don't want to keep rambling without giving you a chance to ask me more questions, but, you know, I just wanted to mention that probably about 2 years ago, I was on a panel and they asked, you know, they asked me when we were done with our presentation, what's the biggest risk when it comes to information privacy and security? And, you know, the answer could be, oh, well, you know, mobile devices, or it could be the workforce, or it could, you know, it could be ex-employees or whatever.
Yeah.
But I felt the biggest risk was that there wasn't enough resources to address risk.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I said the biggest risk is you have an IT director who goes to work putting out fires operationally, who was also deemed the information security officer and doesn't have a second of a day except for addressing technical controls, which is naturally an IT thing. But other than technical, the administrative part is the biggest challenge, and physical is a challenge. They can get help with physical, but policies and procedures, disaster recovery planning, testing and updating, you know, anything to do with documentation and evidence, you know, updating tasks is being completed, simple thing like that. That it's really hard for someone who's wearing two hats, who is under budgeted on funding as well, to actually deal with HIPAA. And the problem is that when there's a breach, when there's in some kind of an incident that's not good, then the question is, well, what happened?
Right.
You know, why did this happen? Well, I've been trying to tell you all along, I need more money in the budget, and I need this, I need that, and more people. And I keep getting shot down. But now all of a sudden we have an incident, everybody knows, wants to know why. Well, that's the reason why.
Yeah. Okay. And that's in a large organization where there actually is an IT person.
Yeah.
You can imagine in the smaller, there's no IT department. You know, it's one of the, in a previous episode, we talked about the importance of having HIPAA compliant IT services to help you out, because the person in most small offices that ends up doing this is the one that's just the best with computers.
Yeah, that's right. And the best with computers doesn't necessarily mean the best with understanding.
Yeah, they're not going to know all of it. A professional IT services and understanding security is very different than just go read a book and you can figure it out.
Right. And then we talk about, you know, why is the ISO in IT?
Okay, right. You're going to have to clarify ISO.
Yeah, why IT is the information security officer,
right,
who is really an auditor internally, right?
That's what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, so why are they reporting to IT? That would be like a financial auditor internally reporting to finance.
Yeah.
Okay? If a COO or a compliance officer asks about the status of a disaster recovery plan and the ISO is in IT, there's a little bit of pressure there to say, oh, yeah, it's a great plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Staring at a conference room of C-level people, yeah, it's a great plan, but if the ISO is empowered to be an auditor, a true auditor, and go through that plan and see where the problems are and report it accurately, now all of a sudden the C-level is getting the right story, right?
Right. And
so I really believe the ISO, the information security officer, should not be in IT. They should be outside of IT, independent and unbiased, in my opinion. We'll hopefully see that happen.
Yeah. Well, like we said, well, at least with outsourced IT, they're unbiased.
True.
you hope that you can. It's the trust factor that we always say that you need to have with them. But let's talk about the application. What prompted you to start Comply Assistant itself and develop it? I know you did it. And full disclosure is Jerry and I are business partners, and we use this product to do our compliance and work with the customers of his, and he works with ours. So we do a lot of different things together, and I really love using his product. So I want to have that full disclosure in there. And David,
my full disclosure is that we love Cardin.
Hey,
yeah.
What's not to love?
And we still have yet to meet, and we will.
I know. We worked together for years, and this is how we know each other. Just that voice in the air.
Right. So the thought about Comply Assistant was when I was doing work as the ISO in the health system, using emails, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, unstructured files, you know, trying to coordinate everything across the entire organization, I just felt like there has to be a central repository organized with the rules, organized for collaboration, the ability to have audit trails, attachments for key documents for evidence. So that way, everything's in one place. And, you know, hopefully you're able to demonstrate evidence of due diligence and not evidence of willful neglect.
Right? Yeah.
So it's got to be evidence of due diligence. And, you know, when did I send that email? Oh, let me go back through my files. And did they respond? Oh, no, they didn't respond. And multiply that by 100 times. And now all of a sudden you're spending, you know, your entire day is just trying to coordinate and remember and send a reminder. And, you know, a lot of times when somebody gets an email and they don't respond, you know, they're not going to respond necessarily to the next time. But when they're in a centrally organized repository and there's something to do and there's a team effort and you send out the what's the status, everybody gets it. And the person who's responsible knows that it's being audited, it's in an audit trail, they feel a little more committed to responding and to getting it done. They also get a little nasty alert saying you're overdue and you're pending and here's what you need to do this week and make sure you get it done and, you know.
Yeah. So it will, and you try, because one of the things that we go into any organization that wants us to just tell us what to do is what often happens. And with business associates, especially because this is all brand new to a lot of them, and we start the ball rolling with saying, okay, up front, you have to have a documentation management plan. You have to know where are you going to keep all this information we're about to start gathering. And you have to be able to pull that up and know why you made decisions 5 years from now, what you decide to do today. You have to be able to pull that up and answer that question when somebody asks. And if you're not here, somebody else is going to have to answer that. And having
that's a big point. That's a really big point right there.
So you have a system in place where everything's going into one place, and it's not like, you know, back in the day where you would have one person in charge of the filing cabinets because they were the only ones that knew how to find the stuff that you wanted in there. And that's basically what people build with the Word documents and the folders and the spreadsheets. And people have done amazing things with that stuff. But if somebody else comes in and has to work with it, then they've got to learn all of those things, where it can get very complicated what they do in some of these spreadsheets and they're writing code and all these kind of things. And I'd much rather have an application that prompts me and tells me, hey, you need to add this document. And so that's what you guys, when you started development on Comply Assistant in, I think you talked, what, 2005?
Well, it's evolved. It was the original version on Microsoft Access just for HIPAA in 2002.
Yeah. Right.
Then it was the first version of the web app.
Yeah.
And then the current version really was released 2010 in the version that you're seeing today that's been enhanced over the last 6 years.
Right.
That's been since 2000. We began in 2009, but the first deploy to a client was in 2010.
So you've been at it for a while now.
Yeah.
And you look at it from the user perspective. It's what it's built on. It's not being built by people who say, hey, I understand you're supposed to do this, and let me write some software to do it. You directed the product from the beginning based on the understanding of someone that was actually doing the job, which I really appreciate any of that, because a lot of times developers don't ever spend time even with someone who's doing the job, much less have done the job themselves. So I think that's great. And now, as you talk about how it's evolved, there are so many different, you know, when somebody says, what does this do? And I say, well, it's a compliance management tool. But it's hard to explain that, first of all, because so many people don't understand all the parts. But when you look at that, it does your contract management, it does your incident management, your documentation storage and indexing, the project management tool that you've added to it, and then a very valuable due diligence tool, and your assets and assessments and your audit, it's all in there. It's all in one place. So you log in and you're going to go to whatever area you're working with and be able to find that history and be able to see what's going on in your program. And that's what got me really excited and involved, and saw it as a tool that we could easily adapt to any size or type of organization. And you and I are even working on adapting it for things that aren't even healthcare. So it's been fantastic to work with because it has all those tools built in. And particularly the contract management, one of the things we learned is when you get the business associates are now having to do this stuff, and you look at like a software company and they have their business associate agreements with the covered entities that they sell to. Then they have the business associate agreements with the vendors that they use and visit. So they have ones with their subcontractors. Sometimes they're a business associate to another business associate, and having some tool to reference those hundreds of contracts is phenomenal as far as a management and being able to see something overwhelming and not just see a pile on top of your desk.
Yep. And I can tell you, Donna, that you are 10 times better than me in sales.
I'm not good at that.
I want to bring you in on every one of our demos. How's that?
Thank you. I appreciate
it. But you are correct. But then the other thing is the unstructured files, you know, nobody has to be afraid that they go away, because they don't go away. What happens is if there's an incident, it could be documented in a compliance system, but if there's some kind of a document that needs to be attached, it's a Word document or Excel or whatever, it's attached. And there, you know, the software has the ability to attach any kind of file anywhere. But the nice part about it is you can locate that attachment through the documentation function easily. It shows where it's linked to, you know, and it actually is a supplement throughout the software, so that it, you know, if something is evidence of whatever kind of format, it's there. So you have, what you have is a combination of templates with the guidance and structured central repository of data, along with any kind of an attachment that's necessary in any kind of formatted, you know, document, whether it's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whatever. For example, you can actually task meetings and have a task group just for meetings and have agendas and PowerPoints of the presentation. You could have, you know, training task groups, or you could be using the nice new online training from Cardin. But it's just very flexible. You have to almost think of it that when you start to use the software, except for all of the content from the rules and the guidance and the functions that are in there that are, you know, starting point, you're starting with a clean slate, and it's very flexible to just use it and build up your evidence. So just keep, every time you use it, you're building up evidence of due diligence.
Yeah, Jerry's really good at using the term evidence. Have you noticed that, David? Mm-hmm. With your background, evidence feels a little squirrely different, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've had my fair share of evidence.
David at one time worked in law enforcement.
Oh, okay, I understand.
evidence. I like it, though, but it seems kind of intimidating.
that's like documentation. You know, that's where I kind of got my phrase from when I was in law enforcement. That's what they would tell us. If you didn't document it, it didn't happen.
Didn't happen,
you
right?
Know, you're on the stand and you start telling a story, and the lawyer's going to look at you and go, "I'm sorry, that's not in your report."
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
You didn't document it. So,
yeah, it's true.
That's the exact same thing that I try to tell people is when we're doing any of the work and you're making decisions, it's just like David just said, when you're on the stand, how long will that take, David? I mean, you go 6 months, a year, 2 years before you could be put on the stand to answer questions about decisions you made today and information you knew today. And that's part of the documentation that needs to be there. Not just start doing it, but document why you made those decisions and what information you have.
Right.
Yeah. It's not just about, I mean, it's a lot about proving what you've done, but it's also about being able to go back at any point in time and looking at it and reading it and going, okay, now I remember why I did that. I mean, you know, I don't even remember what I have for breakfast this morning, much less what I did, you know, a year ago to document something. So yeah, if you don't document that, then there's no way you can cover yourself.
That's
You know, or if somebody else has to figure out what you decided. I make decisions all the time, and here's how we're going to do our own internal compliance. And we write it down. And even now, people go back and go, hey, this is why we're doing this.
Yeah.
You know, do we need to change it? You can go back and see all of the information. Has the information changed? It's so much easier because we're keeping track of it and keeping that revision history and the discussions that are going on. It's all attached and all in one place.
Right.
And you need to be doing that. It's whether or not you use Comply Assistant tool, or you do it on your own, or you use another tool, the end result has to be the same. Find something that'll work.
So when it comes to a government audit, we know that they give a 2 weeks notice.
Yeah, we were just reading one of those letters today.
Yeah. So if I have Comply Assistant and I'm working in a hospital and it's up to date and I get the notice, I'm going to smile. I'm going to wish it was today. But if I'm
like that kind of confidence,
if I'm totally unorganized, I'm gonna wish it was 3 months from now,
right?
So I can get organized. The other thing is, I've been told that when an auditor looks at the fact that a hospital or a healthcare organization or practice has Comply Assistant or some tool like it, they tend to back off a little bit. You know, you start to show how well organized you are. This is where everything is. Feel free to take a look. You know, they'll tend to back off on the audit and not do as an extensive an audit as maybe for somebody who they perceive to be totally unorganized with lacking evidence. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to it from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And even for other things besides HIPAA, for meaningful use, they're at testing for money. If your meaningful use information is all organized,
right,
you get audited for that attestation, you're able to show exactly where the documentation is. So there's so many benefits to being organized when it comes to compliance. And we have to keep in mind it is a legal matter, and legal matters require, like we said, evidence, and that all has to be organized. So that's the key.
Yeah, because you're not kidding about having the 14 days to pull all the information together, and there's a list of 20 pieces of information they want. And it's not just, do you have a policy and procedure? It's, show me the policy and procedure that you utilize that applies to this section of the law and evidence that it's being done, and as well as when it was implemented and the revisions and redrafting that you've done since then. I mean, that's not something you just, you know, randomly pull out. And certainly grabbing something off the wall, because right there in bold, it says you're encouraged to submit it electronically. So.
Yeah.
Right. Having a bunch of paper, you know, and I've had people tell me, and they're comfortable with it, and that's fine. I think that the first and foremost is that you be comfortable with it, and some people just don't like change. But having it on paper doesn't give you access wherever you are, because a crisis, you're not going to be sitting in your office necessarily, and somebody that has to run there and get it. And if you have the folders on your computer, or you have the folders on a server where only you may have access to it, or a couple of people, you're creating limitations and you're creating actual risk.
Yep.
So that's why I'm a fan of having a system that allows you to access it remotely in the cloud, like Comply Assistant. And again, The most important thing is that you use the tool, because we actually were showing it. I was demoing it one time to someone. We don't use names. And it was at a trade show, and I was kind of taking them through the product. And one of the cool things that I like is on the dashboard, it shows you recent activity. So I can at any time go in and see what's been going on, what's happening, what's being worked on. And I was real excited. So I was like, now you have evidence of your due diligence. You're actually doing the work. And he goes, yeah, but they're also going to see that I'm not doing it because I'm not going to do it.
Wow.
I was like, why are you wasting my time?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he looked eye to eye. I thought he was joking. I laughed at first. And then he was just absolutely serious. And I was like, okay, this maybe isn't a thing for you then. And I'm not quite sure what your plan is. But he was dead on that it's going to show that I'm not doing it. Well, even if you're doing the work, but you're not using your tools, it needs to, you know, you're never going to be able to prove it. So it's important to make the tools part of your workflow. And, you know, we try to train people to be involved in those things as any kind of things that you're doing, it's happening within there.
Yeah.
And we end up having conversations with people so that the decisions that they're making, and they have a question, we have this scenario and this is what our policy says and how should we include this new scenario? And they'll put it into this whole, I had an issue, here's what's come up, and the entire discussion gets documented as we're doing it.
Yep.
So I get excited about software though, you know how I am.
Well, to the individual who said he wouldn't do it or he or she wouldn't do it, the real problem is if they're not doing it in Compliance, and if they're not doing it anywhere else, even in Excel or anywhere,
right?
If they have a breach, they're sunk, because that breach, when it's investigated, is going to be willful neglect, totally.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the biggest penalties and lawsuits come into play. Now, a breach under any circumstance is not good, obviously, but if you have a breach and there's an investigation and it turns out that you are doing the best you can, that you have taken steps to identify risk and to reduce risk and to encrypt and to do whatever, then I have to believe that the penalties are less because you have evidence of due diligence. You do have a breach. It's not. It's never good. It's never a positive thing.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good to anybody.
No, but I have to believe that the more evidence of due diligence you can show that you were trying to do the right thing, that you know, if that doesn't come out in the story and if that doesn't impact the amount of penalties and lawsuits and reduce them to some degree, then I would be surprised. So you got to be able to show
them. They want to know that you're trying.
Yeah.
And David's started making a good point, and we may even do a whole episode on this discussion, is David's telling people it's patient care. We're talking about patient care here. We're not talking about HIPAA. We're not talking about laws and regulations. We're talking about patient care. And I think that a lot of the things that people forget about in worrying about the pieces and parts of what you've got to do and all of these things are in place not necessarily to be overburdening to you, but it is because if we don't think about what could happen and we're not actively involved in making sure that we're doing these things, things go wrong. That's when things happen.
You know,
if you've got kids and you set rules and then you never actually check to see if they're following the rules, how does that go, David?
Yeah, they don't go very well.
Yeah.
For that matter, you know, employees or anything.
Right.
You know, I always tell people that when you hire employees, most of the time, unless you just really got a rock star employee, most of the time, the first thing they want to do is find out how little they can do and still keep their job.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and so then you know that is where you've got to manage to. So if
you're not talking about Congress now, right?
Yeah, well, they think they're more important than all the rest of us. They're really getting a lot of work done.
Yeah.
No.
That's right.
Something. Get something done. But overall, I think that tools that we've discussed and the need for them is very important. And I know that you've seen the horror stories as well as the positive impact of doing these things. So sometimes it works well that you were doing these things and you catch things and you're excited about them. And then other times you walk around, and I think you were telling us earlier that you walked into a hospital with a big screen TV up on the wall and it had all kinds of PHI on it and people walking by it every day and never saying a word.
Yeah, well, new ED, going through it for the first time. This is a client that had for a number of years. And that's what really shocked me, was that they were a client and still are, but for a number of years. And I see this new ED with these monitors and a patient tracking type software showing a 76-year-old woman with her chief complaint, admission diagnosis, blah, 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 which was rather sensitive data. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit.
And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm with the privacy and security officer on doing a walkthrough. And I kind of looked at him. I said, am I being punked right now or am I in candid camera? I said, is this like a joke?
You're just looking around everywhere.
I said, you know, three of us know this is not good. And they said, well, again, politics, politics, politics. And the physicians wanted it. And, you know, we need a letter from you saying they can't do this.
I'm thinking,
I'm there doing the walkthrough like on one day out of the entire year, right?
Right.
And then I have to do a letter and then it's going to go away. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah. And, you know, we're running into it all the time. Security's, what is the phrase? David says, security's not convenient.
Right.
Yeah, he was saying that the other day. Security's not convenient. And it's understanding those things and getting them in the right place. But I brought that up just to say that even when you have the tools, it's the people and the decisions and the activity that's going around. And I'm sure that all of the documentation about that decision and your letter is now in compliance assistant for that client, but they needed that third party. They needed that outside decision maker expert to give them that opinion. And so we know that that takes place, and we know that there's no silver bullet for HIPAA.
Yeah.
But we certainly do enjoy working with you guys, and we're going to have links to the Comply Assistant site and more information. If you're interested in seeing a demo, we can set all that up. But either way, make sure that you have some sort of a documentation plan in place. So I think
I can kind of end it on a good note.
A good note. Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right. So about 2 years ago, one of our clients got a call, got a terminate the agreement, and person loved the software. The reason was because it was a new compliance officer. Immediately after day one, said canceling the software. There was really no reason, rhyme or reason. So about 4 months ago, the ISO was the main contact for us, said, I went to this person's office. I told them flat out that I was organized until they took compliance system away. I'm totally unorganized now. I want it back, and shame on you for taking it away, right? And person apologized, said, of course, you know, you can have it, go ahead, reinstate it. So along the way, we never deleted it. We just inactivated it. We gave them view-only access, but now it's been reactivated, and they're using it, and he's a happy camper. So we thought we lost the client, but we got the client back. So that's a good story.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And they clearly like what they see and able to get organized. Organization. We have a whole section. We should do a whole thing on that, but then I'd feel like a hypocrite.
Yeah. And I also want to mention one more thing.
Hypocrite.
I want to mention one more thing very quickly, and that is, I don't know what percentage of the current functionality came from recommendations from you, Donna, and Carla Carden, but a significant amount of, and you should be asking for a percentage of equity of our software.
Oh, man.
You've made such good recommendations to us. And I'm sure you're going to say, and we also responded nicely, but
I wasn't going to say that.
You've helped us make our product better just by our partnership.
So. Oh, well, thank you very much. And you guys do your great responsiveness. There's times we were working on stuff in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden we'd see you guys hop in and start working on it. So we do appreciate you guys. And I feel all embarrassed and shy. Thank you for the compliments.
Oh, Lordy. So that sounds like a good note to close on. So, Jerry, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast and talking about your product and your background from way back in the 1800s.
Yep.
So we're probably going to have to do a podcast on what actually Y2K was. I wonder how many people even remember that.
Yeah,
really?
Definitely.
So, but that was, it was great. It was great talking to you and learning more about your product. And we look forward to seeing some more success coming from your product and your company. And we'll have, like Donna said, we'll have the links on the website if people want to get in touch with you on that. You can also get in touch with Donna directly if you're a smaller practice to look at that and demo it and all that good stuff. So we want to, as always, invite you to hop over to iTunes and give us a review. You can also check us out on our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. If you have a question that you would like to leave for us and possibly get it answered on one of our HIPAA Answers episodes, there is a SpeakPipe widget right there on the front page you can use to leave us a voicemail, or you can even send us an email right from our contact page. So once again, we thank you for listening and have a wonderful week.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grindle and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grindle or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.